Welcome to our session, Health Services Research in Obstetrical and Well Child Care. And this session is sponsored by the Maternal Child Health Section. I'm Melanie Lutenbacher from Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. And we must make a statement about disclosure. And because all the panelists, and Christy, I noticed you didn't have any disclosures either, right? Okay. So I'll make one statement for all of us, and that none of us have anything to disclose. So we've done that piece. If you haven't already, please silence your cell phones so that we're not disrupted. What I'm going to do is introduce each of the speakers, and they'll be sitting up here as a panel. And we'll have each of the speakers go through their presentation in the order in the conference book, and then we'll save the time at the end for questions. So if you have questions, whether it's points of clarification or a question along the way, just jot it down, and then we'll get to that at the end of the session. Each speaker will have about 15 minutes to present their paper, and I will be giving them some time signals, and I think we are ready to start. So if I can invite our panelists to come up, and I'll start introducing. Our first presenter, and actually I told her she has a very strong position because she has the first word, and then she also has the last word. So that's Katie Cosimano, and she is an assistant professor in the Division of Health Policy and Management at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. Her research applies the tools of health policy and health services research to the field of women's health with a focus on the perinatal period. Dr. Cosimano conducts research to inform the development, implementation, and evaluation of health policy that impacts reproductive age women and their families. So welcome. Our second speaker is Dr. Allison Bryant. And Dr. Bryant is a high-risk obstetrician at Massachusetts General Hospital. Her research, clinical, and health policy interests concern prevalent racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic disparities in pregnancy outcomes. And in addition to her training in maternal-fetal medicine, she has also completed programs in minority health policy at Harvard Medical School and in clinical and translational research at the University of California in San Francisco. Perhaps more importantly, she is mother to two reasonably well-spaced preschool boys. We welcome you as well. And then our third speaker today is Dr. Christina Beffel. Is that how you pronounce her last name? Okay. And she is a professor in the Department of Pediatrics, School of Medicine at Oregon Health and Science University. She's the founding director of the Child and Adolescent Health Measurement Initiative and director of MCHB's National Data Resource Center for Child and Adolescent Health. The CAMI is a national initiative established in 1997 with the mission to advance a high-quality, patient- and consumer-centered healthcare system for children, youth, and families. And we welcome you as well. So if you'd like to take us away, go ahead.
Welcome and good morning. Congratulations on getting all the way down the hallway. And perhaps you have not had coffee. Raise your hand if you do not have coffee. So, and you're from the West Coast. Bless your hearts for being here. Oh. So thank you. I'm really pleased to have the opportunity to talk with you about my research today. And we'll make it worth your while for getting all the way down the hallway. So today I'm going to be presenting a couple of papers. I have that opportunity, and they're very different from one another. So the first paper focuses on the use of non-medical methods of labor induction in pain management among women who give birth in the U.S. Thank you. I have nothing to disclose. These ladies might have something to disclose. childbirth is the most common reason for hospitalization in the United States. We have about 4 million births every year. And it's a common reason for use of medical services by women who are otherwise healthy for the most part. And we know a lot about medical care during childbirth. We know a lot about what is used during childbirth, but what is less known is about non-medical ways that women manage pain during labor and ways that women try to start their own labor. So medical care has transformed childbirth in a lot of very good and important ways, but medical care during birth does have both benefits and risks. The benefits are very clear. Medical induction of labor is extremely effective. When people need to have a baby, medical induction of labor can help them to have that baby, gets labor started in it, and it moves in that direction. About 23% of women in the U.S. have their labor induced according to the birth certificate data. And in addition to that, neuraxial analgesia or epidurals are an extraordinarily effective way to manage pain during labor, and about 75% of women have epidurals during labor. However, these extremely effective medical technologies are not without without certain risks, and it's important to understand both the benefits and risks when we think about medical care in childbirth. So women of childbearing age are the primary users of complementary and alternative medicines in the U.S., and the use of alternative health strategies and non-medical means of managing common symptoms of pregnancy and childbirth are really commonly discussed both clinically and in the lay literature and the gray literature. If any of you, as I did, as you were post-term in a pregnancy, start Googling for how do I get my labor started, there are plenty of options that that you can find online. But the frequency and prevalence of many commonly discussed non-medical methods is not very well known. The studies that are out there, including the effectiveness studies, are often very small. They're limited to one institution or one population. And so we don't know, sort of on a national level, the frequency with which these non-medical methods are used. So for self-induction of labor, in terms of the efficacy, many of the strategies, there's not good data on effectiveness. The best data are for non-medical means of getting your labor started is for nipple stimulation. Guess you guys maybe didn't know we were going to talk about nipple stimulation quite this early in the morning. Hey, those of you who haven't had coffee yet. In terms of non-medical methods of pain management, effectiveness of different strategies that are commonly cited is variable. There's some good evidence for the effectiveness of water, acupuncture, acupressure, massage, relaxation techniques, including breathing and visualization. And continuous labor support has been shown to be highly effective in helping support women in managing pain during labor. So the goal of our research was really to characterize the use of non-medical care to induce labor or manage pain during labor in a nationally representative sample of women who gave birth in the U.S. We were also really interested in exploring the association between medical and non-medical methods to see whether or not women, there was any evidence of substitution of one for the other in the literature. And I just have to note that this beautiful woman here is my yoga teacher, Jessica, and she had her baby Theodore on Saturday. The data that we used for this analysis comes from a survey called the Listening to Mothers 2 survey. It's a nationally representative sample of women ages 18 to 45 who gave birth to a single infant in a hospital, in a U.S. hospital in 2005. For the purposes of this study, because we were looking at processes that happened during labor, we excluded women with scheduled cesarean deliveries and those who did not experience labor. And our final study population was just over 1,100 women. There were sort of two major important variables that we looked at here, labor induction and pain management, and we looked at both medical and non-medical means of these. So the data that we have here are based on women's self-reports of their use of these technologies or methods during labor. So medical labor induction basically meant that the doctor started labor, either by using Pitocin, by using a cervical gel, a tablet or pill, or by sweeping or rupturing the membranes. Non-medical methods were exercise, herbal treatments, castor oil, sex, and nipple stimulation. For pain management, the medical methods included, again, it was basically clinician-led pain management that included use of an epidural, narcotics, or local or general anesthesia. The non-medical methods that were asked about included using a tub or a shower, position changes, using a birthing ball, hot and cold temperatures, mental strategies, aroma, music, breathing, and hands-on techniques. The covariates that we included include a lot of the general sociodemographic variables that we tend to include typically in this type of work, but there were a couple of additional variables in this data set that were really important for these outcomes. And they include at the bottom whether or not a woman had support from a birth doula, who is a trained professional who supports women a woman in non-medical ways during childbirth, and whether or not she agreed with the statement that birth is a natural process that should not be interfered with unless medically necessary. So we got a little bit more of a sense of sort of how women feel about medical versus non-medical management of birth. In our analysis, we present descriptive statistics as well as multivariable logistic regression models. We had two separate models. One is basically looking at predictors of non-medical methods. What are the characteristics associated with the use of these methods? And the odds of use of medical methods based on whether or not a woman used non-medical techniques. Because we used a survey data set, we accommodated the survey design and used weights for national representativeness in these data. So this is the characteristics of the study sample. Now that's smaller than I expected that it would be. However, let me just tell you that in general, this looks an awful lot like the U.S. childbearing population as it is intended to. I'm going to draw your attention to two the variables that I mentioned earlier that were somewhat unique in this data set. So we have about 3% of women reporting that they had support from a birth doula when they gave birth. And the percentage, almost half, 47% of women, agreed with the statement that birth is a process that should not be interfered with unless medically necessary. This table shows the prevalence and type of non-medical interventions for labor induction. So almost 30%, 28.6% of women in this sample used some kind of non-medical intervention to try to get their labor started. The most commonly used were walking, exercise, or movement, sexual intercourse, and nipple stimulation. And about a little over half of women had a provider attempt to induce labor. And the most commonly used method was Pitocin, followed by rupturing membranes or the clinician breaking their water. And I think one of the interesting things to note here, I mentioned earlier that the birth certificate data show a labor induction rate of around 23%. Here we're showing 50%, and that's because of a difference in how we're measuring it. We're including whether or not a provider sweeps the membranes or ruptures membranes, which is not included in the birth certificate measure of labor induction. And there's a significant overlap on the bottom here. You can see sort of whether women used medical interventions only, non-medical only, both or neither. And there's a substantial overlap of women that used both, actually. And we'll come back to that. So now we're going to look at prevalence and type of non-medical interventions for pain management during birth. And interestingly, it is very common, not surprisingly, childbirth can be a painful process, and one needs a large toolkit to handle that. And so 70% of women used some kind of non-medical method of managing their pain during labor, and almost 85% of women used some kind of medical management. And again, these are women who experienced labor prior to giving birth, and it excludes women that had planned cesareans or who did not experience labor. So the most common non-medical interventions were breathing techniques. Just over half of women used those. Position changes, hands-on techniques, and mental strategies were both used by at least 20% of women as well. Medical interventions, by far the most common was the use of an epidural. And I just want to point out here that once an epidural is placed, that some of the non-medical methods that women use most frequently, like position changes, are no longer possible for a lot of women, or the full capacity for that. You can do some position changes with an epidural, but it limits the capacity to utilize some of the non-medical interventions. And again, there is a lot of overlap. More than half of women used more than one non-medical intervention, so women are using a lot of different techniques. So what this table shows is the odds of use of non-medical methods of either labor induction or pain management by the characteristics that we have. I don't have all of them listed here, but I do have some of the ones that are the most significant. By far the strongest predictor of whether or not a non-medical method of labor induction or pain management was used was whether or not a woman had support from a doula. It's not surprising. Most women that have doulas pay for them out of pocket themselves, and they do that because they are interested in having that skill set of someone who can bring that knowledge of non-medical methods. But it's interesting to see that bear out in these data. There was no association between belief in birth as a natural process and non-medical labor induction, but a strong association between that statement and non-medical management of labor pain. This table shows the association between whether or not a woman used a non-medical method and whether she used a medical method for, in the first column, labor induction, and in the second column, pain management. And the punchline here is women who used a non-medical method of trying to get their labor started were more likely to have medical induction of labor. That's strongly associated with gestational age. So basically, it sounds like, and in reading women's open-ended responses as well, sometimes if there was an induction scheduled, women were trying to get labor started on their own before an induction happened. Interestingly, we also see an association between non-medical pain management and medical and use of basically epidurals for the most part. So women who use non-medical pain management are less likely to use medical pain management. And that makes sense. Once you control for some of the other factors, in particular belief that birth is a process that should not be interfered with, that association is attenuated. I wish we had greater numbers to be able to see whether or not this holds up with big, larger samples, but it was an interesting finding to be sure. So our key findings of our analysis were that we had nearly 30% of women using, basically women use non-medical means of trying to start their labor and managing pain during labor. It's very common. Doula support was the strongest predictor of non-medical methods. And the use of, we found it very interesting that the use of non-medical pain management was associated with decreased odds in the use of pain management. It's very, that stands to reason in terms of common sense, but what does it mean in terms of policy and what we facilitate in terms of access for women and the range of choices that they have available to them? Another question that we had that came out of this is how much do you clinicians and medical staff know about the non-medical methods that women are using, and how do they interact with one another? How do we get a full picture when clinicians are caring for women in the context of birth about all of the ways that they are taking care of themselves? So I've already mentioned some of these implications, but one of them is that we believe that for women with a these data indicate that for women with a preference for non-medical methods, that there may actually be cost savings and potentially improved outcomes when women have access to these non-medical methods. I did a little bit of costing in this analysis. So my husband's an anesthesiologist. So full disclosure, he does epidurals all the time. I've had two babies, one with an epidural, one without. We looked at how much it costs to have an anesthesiologist at a birth and how much it costs to have, for example, a doula at a birth. And for women that would prefer to have a greater range of non-medical resources, that there may be benefits to facilitating greater access to doula services and other ways of accommodating women's desires to use non-medical methods in the medical context. That's a point for discussion. we have a number of important limitations of our study. Outcomes are based on self-report. The non-medical methods were placed in one big category for our analysis, and that's really due to sample size. We don't have detail about the frequency, duration, or intensity, and there are some sample size limitations. We'd really like to see further and work on further study of looking at the interactions between medical and non-medical methods during labor and delivery. These are our final conclusions. They're commonly used, and we need further research to really understand how medical and non-medical methods work together with one another. I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators and co-authors and the funding that I received in support of this work. Thank you very much.